All right, now these past 2 weeks have been eventful in the world of state capture. Politicians and journalists were among the long list of people implicated in the financial demise of our country. Angelo Agrisi's testimony exposed the rot and extent of corruption in the South African government, but also in the private sector. But soon, his evidence was put to question by racism allegations. Since then, there are talks of Bosasa being a mere reflection of how white monopoly capitalists control the country. Now, we're joined in studio now by Suzanne Daniels, who is the former acting head of legal and compliance at the state power utility Eskom, and she's going to help us unpack really this corruption and how endemic it is in our country. Thank you so much for coming through, Suzanne.
Thanks a lot for having me.
It's good to see you what has happened over the last couple of months at Eskom. And I think, speaking of Eskom, maybe I should start the conversation there. I mean, most of the allegations are coming out. You were one of the whistleblowers who came out and revealed what was problematic about some of the contracts Eskom had gotten into. And you've spoken passionately about the need to strengthen laws to protect whistleblowers. Do you think we have sufficient laws that protect whistleblowers?
You know, it's interesting, Clement. We had, I was just reading an article yesterday that said that we have one of the best laws, and, you know, it's ranked quite highly in respect of whistleblowing. Sadly, in my experience, that hasn't been the case, you know, so what looks good on paper might not be quite effective in reality. Yeah. I don't think it takes into consideration the immense stress and personal burden that it places on a whistleblower.
And I imagine that to potential whistleblowers, when they see, you know, people actually being taken as scapegoats, not being protected, I mean, that surely somehow discourages them from coming out and providing the information that may help in revealing and exposing corruption.
I think so. I mean, in my own particular case, someone asked me about recently, you know, would I do it all again? And I very honestly had to say, I'd think twice about it. Yeah. I mean, I've been subjected to death threats, to harassment on the road. My child has been harassed as well. So it's really, you don't actually grasp, you know, the extent to which people will go. I knew that what I was doing was the right thing, but it still didn't prepare me for what the sort of, for want of a better word, the backlash was. Yeah.
Let's speak about how endemic then corruption is. I mean, what are these commissions of inquiries, particularly the State Capture Commission, do you think is telling us about our country and how endemic corruption is?
Look, I was very skeptical about the State Capture Commission at first, you know, having my own experience and just come through that. But having listened now, I think it's a necessary process that we have to go through. The State Capture Commission terms of reference are a lot broader than just, you know, looking at acts of corruption. It's actually looking at how what in the system is actually allowing this kind of corruption. Mm-hmm. So it's really like opening a boil. It's really looking at what exactly is the structural problems in our society that allows for corruption to fester and foster the way
that
it is.
What do you think those structural problems are? What is it that's in the system that's allowing for the capture of the state to thrive as it has been over the last few years?
Look, if I look at and I read through the testimony that has been given so far, you would see that officials very high up have been targeted. You know, you're not looking at the rank and file only. And when you start looking at those kinds of officials, what it means is that they're trying to slowly but surely eradicate the fiber of the institution. Mm-hmm. Because you really look to that leadership to be above reproach. Mm. And particularly in public institutions. Mm. Here you're dealing with the MPA, you're dealing with correctional services, and these are all law-making and law-protecting institutions. I mean, the extent to which Agrisi explained the manner in which, the lens to which they went to get tenders, to actually make sure that their need was fed was quite hectic. And I mean, it just shows you that there is an institutional issue that we have to deal with.
But it takes two to tango, doesn't it? I mean, the corrupt government officials are not only corrupt on their own. There are people who are funding them, who are also bribing them. And maybe, I mean, it's the officials that have demanded those bribes, but there's another hand also coming, I suppose, from the private sector or even private individuals in our country who are making sure also that this corruption thrives. So how do we then build that bridge and make sure that we start, you know, dealing with those systematic issues to try and avoid what's been happening over the last few years?
I think it's going to take us a long while to actually just analyze. I don't think we've even understood, you know, the real situation at the moment. But I think what we should be able to do is to look at individuals that we put in those positions. There's got to be a far more stringent clearance of public officials. You know what Agrizi's testimony showed is that they actually targeted certain individuals. They knew what their weaknesses were. They, they knew
not their proximity to somebody. Yeah.
So it was very calculated. So you would need officials who would be able to withstand that kind of pressure. And that we will have to train and get ourselves into that kind of mode.
I mean, you are also, you play a lot in the legal profession, and I just want to ask you about how significant is what's coming out of the State Capture Commission for our country now and for law enforcement agencies that are fighting corruption? Because, you know, some people say, well, in fact, it's not people. In terms of the terms of reference, you can't necessarily use what's in the State Capture Commission against people that are testifying there. But surely that doesn't stop law enforcement officers to going to these people that have incriminated themselves or people that have been implicated and say, tell us what you know and take it from there. Or do they have to wait for the commission to be done and it has come with recommendations?
I think it's a bit of a double-edged sword for lawmaking agencies right now. Because the commission is following a very methodical and proper legal process where you have witnesses, they can be cross-examined by those implicated, and then that body of evidence Judge Zander will then make a ruling on and make his recommendations. It is then up to the lawmaking agencies, whoever is in the recommendations, to take those recommendations, actually do something about them, you know, to prevent it from becoming a talk show. And also, I think once that process is, at least the first test of evidence has been done for the lawmaking agencies, they should pick up the baton and run. They don't necessarily have to wait until the
it's done.
But I think it's also important they would be probably more prudent. You know, we also are well aware of the MPA's challenges right now. So we actually in a bit of a, you know, gap in society because we actually don't have the capability to really deal with the wide scale corruption and cases that needs to follow.
That's such a
That is the reality that, I mean, I've been grappling with that because I've been impatient and thinking, when are these things going to happen? But after listening to the MPA interviews, one realizes that there's a lot of work that we need to do.
The level of work indeed. And Shamila Batoyi, the new NPA head, is starting work tomorrow.
Yes.
So certainly so much work for her to do. But look, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much
for coming through. That's Suzanne Daniels, the former head of legal and compliance at Eskom. We take a quick ad break and we're back just right after this.